From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch, health, nutrition, fitness, and lifestyle. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Tim Henney.
Well, 8 million women in the United States over the age of 50 are affected by osteoporosis. It's a silent disease, often displaying no signs or symptoms until a fracture occurs, leaving some patients undiagnosed and untreated. Now, postmenopausal women, including younger ones in their 50s, need to make the connection that seemingly insignificant fragility fractures could be a sign of postmenopausal osteoporosis. Our guest is Alexandra Rocco. She's a certified physician's assistant who specializes in osteoporosis and osteoarthritis at Utah Orthopedics. Alexandra, we're pleased that you could join us. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Osteoporosis and osteoarthritis. I know that as I was writing the two down, I was sort of confused between, but I assume, and you can clarify for us, is osteoporosis the precursor to osteoarthritis?
It's a common thing that is confused. They're actually two different disease processes, and they do often coexist. The main difference, as you mentioned earlier, is that osteoporosis is, for the most part, a silent disease. People have no idea they have it. And osteoarthritis is usually what people think of in terms of knee pain or hip pain or joint pain. So they are often coexistent, but they are different processes for sure.
And so anyone can get osteoarthritis. It's something that comes on with the aging process, men, women, premenopausal or post. Is that right?
Well, that's correct. I mean, both osteoporosis and osteoarthritis can happen in anyone at any age, even premenopausal women and men. So, yes, osteoporosis can, you know, it's largely thought of in the postmenopausal population, but it definitely can happen much, much earlier. And I do have women in their 40s who may actually be technically postmenopausal because of a total abdominal hysterectomy, for example, that was done many years earlier in their life.
Alexandra, I'm curious about the difference between a disease and a condition with respect to this. Maybe it's irrelevant. I mean, I could just go, well, it doesn't matter. You end up with the same issue and you have to deal with it in the same way. But is there any significance to this being a disease versus a condition?
Well, I think you're right. It's somewhat, many people would argue, it is just a matter of semantics. When you use the term disease, it does sound a little bit more nefarious for sure. But you're right. At the end of the day, you're still left with something that interferes with your quality of life that should be addressed by hopefully somebody who has a degree of experience and comfort level with whatever the best treatment options are for that particular patient, given a variety of different factors. You know, does the patient tolerate the medicine? Is it affordable? Is it logistically possible for the patient to take this medication? So, I don't know that it really matters whether you call it a condition or a disease, but it's an excellent question, actually.
You know, Alexandra, the reason it kind of sparked my curiosity was because when I think of disease, I think that it's probably a degree of significance that's worse than a condition, but I also tend to think that the treatments are different. You know, disease, you can identify, you can diagnose, and you can more aggressively deal with it with, as you just pointed out, medications and things like that. Where a condition, I think, I personally relate to more lifestyle type of adjustments or behavior changes.
I would agree with that in general. The thing about osteoporosis and osteoarthritis in general, I do refer to them as diseases because they are lifetime issues that the patient and their practitioner has to manage. So I would say, you know, certainly regarding osteoporosis, it is a disease because it is something that is the natural part of getting older. I mean, you have the first, I don't know, roughly 30 years or so of your life to build bone. Things kind of stabilize for a while. Then after menopause, when your estrogen levels decline, then you become less and less secure in your skeleton, so to speak. You become more osteoporotic with time. And sometimes things happen in those bone formative years that put you essentially behind the eight ball, where you don't develop the bone quality that you maybe otherwise could have. And so when you become, you know, just postmenopausal or perimenopausal, you're surprised to learn that you have a condition that now you have to manage the rest of your life. And so whether you call it a condition or a disease, I personally refer to it as a disease because it is something that the patients do have to manage the rest of their life.
If you're just joining us, our guest is Alexandra Rocco. She's joining us to talk about osteoporosis and osteoarthritis. 8 million women in the U.S. over the age of 50 are affected by osteoporosis. And I want to go back, Alexandra, to your 30s, when this time that you're building bone. What are those people whose bone density or whose bone formation does not form correctly, leaving them open to osteoporosis or arthritis later on in life? What should they be doing differently?
Well, right, from a very young age, of course, you want to make sure that you're getting lots of weight-bearing exercise, impact, jump rope, pogo stick when I was a kid, you know, things like that. You want to make sure you have a very balanced diet. Calcium is very easy to get through the diet, vitamin D not so much. But you definitely want to avoid alcohol, smoking. You want to make sure that you are aware of family history, which is the number one risk factor. So if your mother and grandmother fell and had a ground level, a fracture from a ground level fall, or lost an inch and a half more of height, you want to be aware that this is something that you are absolutely likely to face in your lifetime. And so you want to be fairly aggressive and make sure that your activity levels are appropriate to make sure that you don't get to that same unfortunate place as your mother or grandmother, who, you know, ends up in the hospital with a hip fracture or just in chronic pain from their spine compressing. So when you're in your 20s and 30s, it's not that it's too late, but you want to definitely spend time in your bone formative years. Smoking, alcohol are two of the very big risk factors. In addition to control of any other chronic disease states like diabetes, which is another well-known risk factor, many people have to take steroids for a variety of reasons. In their bone formative years, taking 3 months or longer of any steroid over the course of their lifetime, we are considered those people are at risk for osteoporosis. So these are people that potentially would think about getting a bone density test and appropriate lab work at a premenopausal time frame so they have a baseline. And the recommendation is that we get a DEXA scan or a bone density test every 2 years to monitor your bone status moving forward. So if you know you're at risk, you want to have a certain mind space about it moving forward.
So that brings up an interesting question that I have. It seems when women and or men get into about their 40s, that's when you start hearing your doctor say, oh, you really should get a bone density test. Would you only get a bone density test or a DEXA scan when you're in your 20s or 30s, say, if you had some particular risk factor, or is it good to have a baseline?
I think it's probably prudent to get it when you're really can identify some strong risk factors. I see patients with multiple sclerosis, seizure disorder. I see a tremendous correlation between those disease processes and osteoporosis. So those are people that I absolutely would scan at an earlier age, or anybody that you're suspicious have a low energy fracture. It's one thing if you get in a car accident or, you know, skiing or down a flight of stairs, but if you trip over your dog and you've got a hip fracture and you're only in your 30s, that should raise tremendous suspicion from anyone and everyone that this is somebody who is obviously at risk and may have even a rare bone disease that they may not have been aware of.
What are the hurdles that keep people from getting a bone density scan? I mean, I'm assuming there's cost. I'm assuming that insurance does or does not pay for it.
Exactly. And it does if you're going to get a bone density test on a patient that is, younger, you may have the practitioner very well may have to actually get on the phone with the insurance company and convince them why this patient is at risk. That can be a bit of a time constraint. But yes, the hurdles are largely from a cost perspective, insurance companies, but also from a patient and provider education level. I mean, many primary care providers, unfortunately, have so many things to manage in a patient. They're not thinking osteoporosis when you're looking at your average 35-year-old patient. And it's unfortunate because, you know, there aren't that many people like me in the state that do treat osteoporosis. I look at everyone and I think about it. But if you have any suspicion that there should be no barriers to getting a simple DEXA scan, and truthfully, the DEXA scan, where you get the DEXA scan and the quality of the DEXA scan is highly variable. And, you know, I send all of my patients whenever possible to Ogden Regional Medical Center. They have some fit software on their DEXA scan machine that no one else in the state has that gives us a tremendous amount of data that allows us to identify patients at risk or who already have full-on osteoporosis that I would not be able to detect in DEXA scanners from other facilities in the area. And our tech, Sandy, is incredibly meticulous in her technique, and it really does make a difference. And I've been to many, many conferences and lectures where they display a variety of the different quality of DEXA scans, and sometimes people don't realize that it's a fairly technical study, and it can make a difference if it's not done appropriately and if it's not done on a machine that really can give us the data that we really need to make the diagnosis.
Well, let's say I wanted to go get a baseline scan of my own, and I don't care if the insurance company is going to pay for it. Or let's just say they're not going to pay for it. Do I have to get a referral from you, or can I make an appointment with Ogden on my own and drive up there and get a scan so I know what my bone density is?
You definitely need a prescription, but that's not hard to do. You let me know when you want to go, and I'll send it in for you.
And what would the cost be to me doing
that's
it on my own?
That's a great question. The great thing about Ogden Regional in particular is they are really good about working with the patient. We had a patient just recently who doesn't have insurance, and they gave her a great deal. I don't know what that would be, but they're very, very conscious of that kind of thing, and so they would make it affordable, absolutely.
Alexandra, is a DEXA scan synonymous with a bone density test? It's the same thing. We're just calling it okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
I recently had one, and I believe that insurance covered all except a, you know, insignificant portion. But again, you know, I was surprised that it's sort of the first you hear about it, you know, at a later stage in life. But nevertheless, I wanted to ask you, when you were talking about some of the risk factors for having poor bone density, and you mentioned steroids, which I don't know why it led me to think about chemo and radiation. Are those other risk factors?
Wow. Well, yes, that is a very special population. I have several of those patients, unfortunately. And yes, absolutely. Unfortunately, a lot of cancer patients end up on a class of medications called bisphosphonates, which are wonderful medications that help control or even prevent bony metastases from different cancers. The good news about bisphosphonates is they do a great job of controlling the bony metastases, and technically, historically, they've been used also to improve the bone density for osteoporotic patients. I personally and probably a little bit different than many of my practitioners, my peers nationwide, in that I really don't use bisphosphonates because I also still do orthopedic surgery. I do see the complication of atypical femur fractures, which is just a horrible problem for a patient who has been on chemo already, maybe has had radiation. Now they're walking down the street, or recently had a patient who's walking up the stairs and she broke both her femurs simultaneously. Mm-hmm. So, and this is a well-known side effect for the bisphosphonates, which is why I mostly use anabolic agents, which actually build bone back, return density to the bone, which is a pretty phenomenal thing because most people don't realize that's even possible. So it's a very, very powerful alternative to have, especially in some of these cancer patients.
Yeah. Talking about building bone back, say you're postmenopausal, And you find out that you have poor bone density and you're just a time bomb, really, for a fracture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we hear that to do these weight-bearing exercises, a little walking or running. What else can you do? You mentioned vitamin D before, but I mean, if you're at that point in life, what can be done and is it significant?
It is significant, actually, because as you mentioned earlier, I mean, roughly 50% of women in the United States over the age of 50 will sustain a fragility fracture of some kind in their lifetime. If they are truly, as you alluded to, a ticking time bomb, they're really, all the weight-bearing exercise in the world isn't going to help you as much as the anabolic agents that I referred to earlier. You really do need to be on a medication that is going to stimulate bone growth. There are two on the market currently. Recommendation is that you're on these medications for 2 years total in your lifetime. And I've seen some incredible improvement in bone density. I've seen patients who report that they have actually fallen, but not fractured. And that is tremendously comforting to patients. And they feel better because, especially patients that suffer from osteoporosis in their spine, which really is where almost everybody has it, and it's almost always worst in the spine. But what's happening is their spine is compressing with the forces of gravity over time, and so they suffer sort of low back pain. It's not really the kind of thing that's necessarily going to send somebody to the emergency room, like a hip fracture or a wrist fracture, but they're aware of it, and it's annoying, and it may interfere with their quality of life in general. When they get on one of the anabolic agents, they oftentimes report their back pain goes away. They feel better. They have more confidence. They're not terrified that they are going to explode into a fragility fracture with the least amount of force.
Well, Alexandra, you have me feeling bad about having made fun of and been kidding my mother for the last 10 or so years as she has shrunk every time I see her,
yeah.
Noticeably shorter. And yeah. I mean, a lot shorter than 10
yeah.
years ago. And it is kind of funny because I don't think she's experiencing pain or anything, but it certainly would be an indicator of some of these issues.
Absolutely.
And, you know, from a really big picture, high level standpoint, I'm curious about, you know, sedentary lifestyle and the effects that that might be having, not only on women, because women have their own issues later in life, but what are you looking at men and sort of this next generation that is aging up right now who has led what would be a significantly more sedentary lifestyle than when I was a preteen and then a teen? I mean, I was very active, and I kind of look at kids these days and I'm like, I wonder how that's going to translate into later life.
I absolutely worry. I have young children right now. I have a 13 and 9-year-old, and I worry about it absolutely in this upcoming generation. I've been a fitness instructor for over 30 years, and so my kids come with me to the gym all the time, and I do worry about it. It is definitely frightening, and I just am so grateful that we have the medications that we do to better in the ready for these men and women coming up in the world, because they are definitely at higher risk. These are the people that are going to be behind the eight ball when they do become adults, and they're going to be, you know, in trouble. And that's why I'm glad we have other options. I mean, there are not a ton of different medications to treat osteoporosis, but the ones that we have, like I said, the anabolic agents, those are incredibly powerful, very safe. If you go to somebody like me that does this all the time, we have ways of making it affordable. I have an incredible assistant who is incredibly good at making these medications affordable, even for patients that don't even have insurance. So, you know, having a financial barrier hopefully will not be an issue for so many people that need access to these medications. And currently, as I indicated, I mean, the postmenopausal osteoporosis is highly underrecognized, highly undertreated. I practice with my husband, who's an orthopedic surgeon, and almost every single patient he sees gets what he calls the dexaporosis workup. And we treat patients for a good 3 months with these anabolic agents before they have a joint replacement or any kind of reconstructive surgery. because A, we don't want things to fail in surgery, and B, postoperatively, these patients are at risk for falling, right, because now they're on narcotics and they're not walking the same as they were, or maybe they're non-weight-bearing. So we have to give them every tool to have a successful outcome and improve quality of life. And yeah, so it's a big problem for sure.
Well, just a follow-up to that. You and I are concerned and your husband's concerned, and we can speculate about how it's going to translate into the data and what you're seeing. But have you seen have you seen the tip of the iceberg, so to speak, with your practice or with any statistical data?
In terms of numbers of patients?
Yeah, numbers of patients sort of translating to more men, young men, sort of a surprising,
yes.
Oh my, what's happening here,
yes,
sort of
absolutely.
Moment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's actually a fantastic question, because I have several women in their 40s. My youngest is a man who's 36 years old. I think it is just the tip of the iceberg, and I have really endeavored to try to educate as many people as I can about how pervasive it is. I tell my patients it's not a little old lady disease. It's not. It is most commonly thought of in postmenopausal, and the medications that we have that I use, again, the anabolic agents are indicated. Their formal indication is for postmenopausal women specifically. Only one of them is indicated for men, but yes, I have old men, young women who bring in their parent because they've had a ground level fall hip fracture that my husband fixes, and the daughter brings in her mother, and when I'm talking to the mother explaining her DEXA scan and her lab work, I'm looking at the daughter and I'm saying, I'm really talking to you and your siblings and even your children, because it's everywhere. And it is a silent disease, as Lynn indicated in the beginning, and people are shocked to learn that they are very well on their way or even already have it, and they are not your typical postmenopausal little old lady like your poor mom who's lost several inches of height. And, you know, she's the kind of person, if I had seen a long time ago, I could have prevented that.
Wow. Well, then she would have been 5'2 instead of 4'9.
Exactly. And she wouldn't have had to get her pants all shortened. You hear that.
Alexandra, I got a message from a listener who asked about, and I think this is one of the anabolic agents that you talk about, alendronate sodium, and wondering about the side effects, the dental side effects versus the benefits.
Well, if you're talking about a bisphosphonate, yes, there is a very horrible potential side effect called osteonecrosis of the jaw. And I have actually called some of my patients, oral surgeons and dentists, who expressed concern about it. Again, the good news is I personally never use Fosamax, Boniva, Reclast, Actonel. I never personally use those because of this potential side effect. I think it is considered a, quote, rare side effect, but I think if you spoke to the dental community, you'd hear a very different story. People that specialize in osteoporosis, like I do, see it with alarming frequency, and this is a horrible problem that the dental community really struggles with, because the only tool at their disposal is to continue to just debride and wash away and kind of cut away the dead material. And, you know, to have your teeth rot out of your head is just a horrendous. I mean, I have one patient is so bad she can't even wear dentures. So the bisphosphonates, again, Fosamax, Boniva, Actonel, all of those things do have that side effect, as well as the atypical femur fractures that I alluded to earlier. We do see those in our practice with alarming frequency, and I don't believe that it's rare. I think it's just underreported. Much like osteoporosis, oftentimes hip fractures get reported from the hospitals as trauma. It's not really trauma. It's a ground level fall. It's a fragility fracture. Those are different things. Side effects for the anabolic agents, which I don't actually see that often, but the most common one, because these are vasodilators, right? They reduce your resistance in your blood flow, so to speak. You can have a mild headache, which usually is very transient and it goes away after maybe a week or so. The other one I do hear is sort of an ache in the bone, almost like you're getting the flu. But again, it's pretty mild and goes away pretty quickly, usually within a week or so. Those are the two common ones that I do see. There are other potential side effects one of which is it could potentially increase the calcium in your blood and your urine. So oftentimes I actually take people off of calcium supplements while they're on these anabolic agents. And then we do monitor as needed. I do educate the patients on the symptoms of having both too much and too little calcium in their blood. And we talk about getting calcium through the diet, which is always a better option than a pill anyway. And a lot of my patients don't love taking calcium pills because there's certain issues associated with taking a calcium pill. Also, constipation, if you've had kidney stones before, it can make those happen again. So, the side effects of these medications are pretty rare in my experience. They have happened, and most people, who especially those that have already fractured, are more than okay with dealing with a little headache for a couple of days if it reduces their risk of fracturing again. Because once you have a fragility fracture, your chance of having another one within the same year goes up about 5 times. And that's a frightening statistic. If you've had a hip fracture, you really don't want to have another one.
So, Lynn, what did you learn about your bone density test, and was it helpful?
You know, I can't even remember the scores or the values, but I just got a thumbs up. You have great bone density. So I went, okay, I guess I won't worry about that. But Alexandra, maybe that's a good question to wrap this up with is, you know, you have good bone density. You're in your 50s. Should you not worry about it, or should you?
And your teeth aren't falling out.
My teeth aren't falling out. I'm not taking any.
Because I saw
agents.
Lynn rubbing her jaw the moment you said that. She started
Anytime you say necrotic anything,
yeah.
You know. Someone who has good bone density, just keep doing the weight bearing exercises and keep taking your vitamin D and getting calcium through your diet. And what else?
Well, right. So the problem is, Lynn, that you. First of all, a lot of people are told the wrong information. Sometimes they'll call their doctor's office and some well-intending person will tell them they're fine, quote unquote, when they're, quote, only osteopenic, you're fine. Well, the majority, by far, the majority of my patients fracture when they are, quote, only osteopenic, when they're, quote, fine. They're not fine. That is a time to intervene before they fracture. I take tremendous amounts of time to explain the DEXA scan to the patients, what they get a T score and a Z score and the range of the DEXA scan so that they understand it. Because you should understand, if you're going to undergo a test, you should understand exactly what it means in the grand scheme of things. And to be only osteopenic is really an alarm signal. Somebody should intervene at that time because we know it's going to get worse because that's what it does. That is the natural history of being a person. You build bone, things are cool for a while, and then bone goes away. This is the natural history. And unless somebody intervenes, you know, you're going to end up with, you know, like Tim's mother, just getting shorter and shorter, best case scenario, if you don't fall and fracture something else. So it's not okay that you're just told you're fine and do nothing else. Because, again, in your 40s and 50s, the weight-bearing exercise is obviously extremely important. I do very much encourage a regular exercise program. Being a fitness instructor, I always try to encourage patients to, if they don't already belong to a gym, to find a type of class that they really enjoy. Because the message is this whole thing has to be sustainable. If I tell patients to go to higher-impact aerobics class, that's not really sustainable for most of my patients. It has to be something that they enjoy. So exercise, I talk a lot about nutrition, consuming enough water. Amazing how many of my patients are dehydrated. I look at kidney function. I look at liver function. I test for iron levels. I mean, if you're, you know, iron deficient, you're just not going to function as well on a variety of levels. So if you're, you know, if you don't really understand your bone density test, you don't really understand what to do. And if you're, you know, again, most primary care doctors are largely overwhelmed with the big scary things that I don't begin to try to treat. But if you definitely have questions, I'm happy to look at your DEXA scan with you anytime, of course. But, and again, I mean, the quality of the DEXA, I mean, if who knows, maybe one the scanner that you had it on will tell us one thing. And if you came up to Ogden Regional, it would tell us a very different story. And I do see that with some frequency. Because there's something called trabecular bone score, which tells us the quality of the bone. And this can adjust your T scores or Z scores if you're younger, upwardly or downwardly based on. So it's not just about bone density, it's about quality. And again, the anabolic agents that I use, which are both Tymlos and Forteo, they work really, really well to improve the quality of the bone as well as the density. And I've seen people go up between 25 and 30% in just 2 years, which is fantastic and amazing. And, you know, most people don't really realize that they go to a, you know, Costco or wherever, or some sort of health fair, and they get this random scan. They stick their heel in a thing, perhaps, and they think, "Oh, I'm fine." And yeah, not really.
Yeah.
It's not that straightforward.
Good point. We've got to let you go, but Alexandra Rocco is a physician's assistant. She specializes in osteoporosis. And Alexandra, you're at Utah Orthopedics, as you've said, it's in the Ogden area. And I suppose that what you've just said is the reason why someone from Summit or Wasatch County up here in the Wasatch Back would make the trip down to Ogden. But are there other people in this area that specialize like you do, or is it kind of unusual and unique?
It's a little bit unique for Utah. Many of my peers nationwide are surprised to learn that as far as I know, I'm the only full-time dedicated osteoporosis clinic in the state, and it's been a tremendous experience. I operate with my husband, and, you know, it's a really generous thing that Jeff has let me not participate in seeing his orthopedic patients, so I can see the osteoporosis patients, many of which are both his patients and my patients at the same time. But truthfully, then I get patients from California, from Florida, from all over the place, because my message is very clear. It's very much about we're in this together, and I am here to educate and support the patient in whatever decision makes most sense for them.
Right. We've got to let you go, Alexandra. Thank you so much for joining us on The Mountain Life.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life. If you missed part of the show or want to share it, all our shows are posted within the hour on kpcw.org under the Shows tab. We also podcast all of KPCW's Public Affair Hour shows. Wherever you find your podcasts, you can find them under KPCW and the individual show name. So look for KPCW The Mountain Life and take us with you on your next road trip or commute.